The theme for Brother Lewis's classes for the week are Proverbs for Kings, taken from Proverbs chapters 25 to 29. This morning, Brother Roger's class is entitled How to Prepare for Kingship.
Well, my dear brothers and sisters and the Lord Jesus Christ and my dear young people, this morning then we start the first of the sessions proper on Proverbs, and as our chairman has rightly said, we're going to consider Proverbs chapters 25 to 29. I thought actually in terms of beginning this particular study that I might just ask first of all if I could have a show of hands as to those people who have a breakup of the book of Proverbs in their Bibles already completed. Does anyone have a breakup of the book of Proverbs at all? Do you have a breakup marked into your Bible? Show of hands. All right, so really what I'm asking is, if we did a breakup, a short breakup of the book of Proverbs, would that be useful for anybody? And the answer is, it looks as if it may be. So let's start with that, shall we? Because, you see, this particular set of chapters that we're going to look at, God willing, in chapters 25 to 29, of course, forms part of a larger story. And so we may just go through then the essential breakup of the book itself, which is not actually too difficult at all. If you come back to Proverbs chapter 1 then, just for a moment, Proverbs chapter 1, and reading from the first verse, we read these words. In Proverbs chapter 1 verse 1 it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel." Now, in the Hebrew, the word "of" there could be translated either "of" or "for" or "to." And if you look at the context of these chapters, you'll find that I think a better rendering of the word here is Proverbs for Solomon. Now, the reason for that is that you'll find that the theme of these opening chapters are all about the instruction that a father gives a son. These were the instructions given to Solomon himself. They were Proverbs for Solomon, rather than Proverbs of Solomon. And that section runs from chapter 1, verse 1, right through to the end of chapter 9, which is chapter 9, verse 18. So that's the first part of the book, Proverbs for Solomon, the instructions of a father to a son. Now, if you come to chapter 10, verse 1, you'll see then the beginning of the next section, and rather interestingly, it's headed as follows, because you notice that in Proverbs chapter 10 now, and verse 1, it says, "The Proverbs of Solomon." Now, you see, if that first section had really been Proverbs of Solomon, then what would we expect chapter 10, verse 1 to say? And the answer is, well, probably not Proverbs of Solomon, but something like, "These are also Proverbs of Solomon," or "These are further Proverbs of Solomon," or "These are more Proverbs." But it doesn't say that, does it? It just says, "These," or it just simply says, "The Proverbs of Solomon." And so we believe that the first nine chapters are Proverbs for Solomon, but that here in chapter 10, verse 1, we now begin a second section of the book, which are, in fact, the Proverbs of Solomon himself. And that section runs right through from chapter 10, verse 1, to chapter 22, verse 16. And if you come to chapter 22, verse 16, you'll see why it is that a new section, we believe, begins at that point in the book. So section 2 is chapter 10, verse 1, to chapter 22, verse 16. And then you'll notice in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 17 that we read these words, "Bow down thine ear and hear the words of the wise." Chapter 22, verse 17. Now you see that phrase, "the words of the wise." You see, that's a special title for a group of people. In fact, at the beginning of the book of Proverbs, it says, "To know wisdom and instruction, to understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings," says Proverbs 1, verse 6, "the words of the wise and their dark sayings." So here in chapter 22, verse 17, we have the beginning of a section which we might entitle "The Words of the Wise." They were a particular group in Israel, by the way. The Hachamim, they were called. The Hachamim. And they were begun by Solomon. They were the wise ones who gave counsel in Israel. And here is a set of Proverbs, which in fact were written down by them. Now that section runs from Proverbs 22, verse 17, through to chapter 24 and verse 22. So chapter 23, chapter 22, verse 17, to chapter 34, verse 22. And we know that that's the end of the section and the beginning of a new one, because you'll see that in Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 23, a new section begins, section 4. And why do we know that? Why? Because this verse, 24, verse 23, says, "These things also belong to the wise." So we have another section here that we might entitle Further Words of the Wise. And that runs from verse 23 just to the end of that chapter, which is chapter 24. And we know that that's obviously the beginning of the section, because in chapter 25, verse 1, which is where we're going to start our studies, God willing, we have now this title, "These are also Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out." So now we've got another section. They are Solomonic proverbs again. They're of Solomon, but they were a special series of proverbs copied out in the days of King Hezekiah by his men of the Royal Academy of Judah. And that section, we believe, runs from chapter 25, verse 1, right through to the end of chapter 29, and becomes the fifth section of the book. And that brings us to chapter 30, you see, in verse 1. Proverbs 30, verse 1, which says now, "The words of Agur, the son of Jacob, even the prophecy. The man spake unto Ithiel, even unto Ithiel and Ukul, surely I am more Brutus than any man." So section 6 now is the 30th chapter, the whole of the 30th chapter, which we might describe quite simply as the words of Agur. The words of Agur. It's a specific section in the book itself. And now we come to chapter 31. And Proverbs 31 and verse 1 says, "The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him." And that section, we believe, runs from chapter 31, verse 1, through to the 9th verse only. Verses 1 to 9, "The words of King Lemuel." And then finally, in Proverbs 31 and verse 10, we have the beginning of a final section which runs from verse 10 to verse 31. And, well, most of us would know that. Anyone know what those verses are all about? Commonly described as the virtuous woman. Now, you may or may not know that this particular section of the last chapter of the book of Proverbs is in acrostic form. In other words, every verse here follows, in fact, one of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. So the first letter in the 10th verse is the letter Aleph. And the first letter in the 11th verse is the letter Beth, and so on and so forth, right through to verse 31. So what, in fact, we've got here is a special little poem at the end, all about the virtuous woman. And because it's an acrostic poem, it follows the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and that was done, by the way, so that it could be easily memorized. One particular set of notes has described this final section of the book as, and I think quite nicely, an alphabet of wifely excellence. An alphabet of wifely excellence, section 8 of the book, chapter 31, verses 10 to 31. So there it is, you see, that there's the book of Proverbs all divided up. It's not really so hard. And you see, I think that's helpful because it's always handy to know when we're looking at any particular chapter what section of the book we're in. Is this the words of the wise or the Proverbs of Solomon or the thoughts of Agur? And here in chapter 25 to 29, well, let's have a look now at chapter 25, verse 1. To see the section that we're going to be looking at in more detail, God willing. So we're dealing, in effect, with section 5 of the book of Proverbs, which is chapters 25 to 29, as described for us here in this first verse. And you'll notice that it says there, "These are also Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out." Now, the word copied here, Jesenius says that the word means to remove from one scroll to another, and hence to transcribe, which is how a number of translations translate the words. So there was a copying from one scroll to another. Now, you see, I think what we're being told here in this first verse is that these particular Proverbs of Solomon were retained somewhere in the records of the nation of Israel, but they were not included in the original edition of the book of Proverbs. In other words, when the book of Proverbs was first compiled by Solomon, it ended at chapter 24 and verse 34. But when Hezekiah came along, he actually drew from the records of the nation a further collection of Proverbs of Solomon, and he brought them together in the particular order and sequence as we have them from chapters 25 to 29. And I think then, in fact, that he added chapters 30 and 31 as well, and that he rounded off the book. In fact, we're told in the Talmud that Hezekiah and his academy wrote Isaiah, Proverbs, Song of Solomon, and Ecclesiastes. But we're also told that he was credited with the final compilation of the book of Job and of the Psalter. So you see, what we're being told is this. It is my personal belief, in other words, I concur with that thought, is that Hezekiah was responsible for bringing together the book of Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah. That whole section of the scripture was compiled by Hezekiah. Do you know that if you go to a Hebrew scroll of the book of Proverbs, any Hebrew scroll of the book of Proverbs, you know what you'll find at the end of the scroll, right at the end of the 31st chapter? You'll find that when the final verse is completed, you'll find three letters at the end of every Hebrew scroll. H, Z, K. Written into the scroll. You know, those letters are the letters of Hezekiah's name. And it's found at the end of every Hebrew scroll to prove that he was the compiler. Even in modern scrolls, you'll find that today. Hezekiah was the man who, in fact, compiled this whole section of the scriptures. Remarkable. When do you think he did that? At what time of his life do you think there was this enormous burst of spiritual activity? And of course, the answer is, in the 15 years of life that was added to him, remember? In the 15 years of life that was graciously added to him by Almighty God. And he says, doesn't he, in Isaiah 38, that God had saved him. Therefore we will sing my songs in the house of Yahweh, he says. And he sat down to compile those songs and to bring them together. And he organized the book of Psalms. But in fact, this whole poetic section of the divine narrative comes under the hand of this man. Now, I want to draw your attention to something interesting about this particular section. This opening study, by the way, is really, you know, getting familiar with what we're going to look at, and we're not going to start chapter 25 proper until tomorrow. This is all good background material. Now, an interesting idea then. You see what verse 1 says here? It says, these are also Proverbs of Solomon. So although they've been carefully brought together by Hezekiah, they are in fact Proverbs originally written by Solomon himself. Now, one of the interesting things that we're going to find about this section of the narrative is that a number of the proverbs that we will come across have in fact been drawn from the previous collection of Solomon's proverbs. A number of the ones we will find in chapters 25 to 29 have already been written in the earlier section of Solomon's Proverbs, which of course is chapter 10, verse 1, through to chapter 22, verse 16. Let's just have a look at an illustration of that, perhaps several examples. Chapter 25, Proverbs 25, and verse 24. So here it is. It is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman and in a wide house, says Proverbs 25, verse 24. But see, that's already occurred earlier, because if you come back to chapter 21 for a moment, into verse 9, chapter 21, verse 9, in fact, one would say this is virtually the identical proverb in every respect, word for word, Proverbs 21, 9. It is better to dwell in a corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. So you see, what we've got in chapter 25 and verse 24 is a proverb that's already been used. Now, why would we want to use that again? You see. All right, take another one, chapter 26 and verse 13. Chapter 26, verse 13. We're going to take one out of each chapter by way of illustration. The slothful man saith, there is a lion in the way, a lion is in the street. But you see, that proverb has already occurred virtually the same in chapter 22. If you come back to chapter 22 and verse 13, here we have the same proverb. There's a very slight change, but the essence is surely the same. The slothful man saith, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets. So what we've got in chapter 26 is not a new proverb, you see. It's an old one somehow being brought back into this second collection. Now, there must be a reason for that. Chapter 27 and verse 13 says, "Take his garment that is surety for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman." Now, in chapter 20, verse 16, we should find that proverb virtually repeated verbatim in the context of an earlier chapter. So Proverbs 27, verse 13, becomes, in fact, Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 16. "Take his garment that is surety for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman." That's the same proverb, isn't it? Word for word. It's already been used before. In chapter 28 and verse 6, we have these words: "Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich." Now, that's found in chapter 19 and verse 1, but with a slight change. If we come back to chapter 19 and verse 1, it is the same proverb, but it has been slightly altered in moving to chapter 28. And there chapter 19 says, "Better is the poor that walketh in his integrity than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool." And by the time that arrives in chapter 28, it's better is the poor that walks in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, rather than in his lips, in his ways. And the fool becomes, in fact, a rich man in the 28th chapter. So it really begins as the same proverb, but there are some slight alterations by the time it turns up in our second collection, you see. And finally, in chapter 29 and verse 22a. Now, what do we mean by 22a, by the way? Well, if we're ever breaking up a proverb or a section of the narrative so that we're looking at the first part of a verse as opposed to the second part of a verse, and then we would tend to refer to them as 22a or 22b. So here we have 22a, "An angry man stirreth up strife," says the proverb in Proverbs 29, verse 22a. And that's, in fact, already been used in chapter 15. You see, in chapter 15 and verse 18a, we have virtually the same idea here. So Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 18a, "A wrathful man stirreth up strife." The second part of the proverb is different, but the first is essentially identical. You see, I think there's a lesson that we draw from this. It's worth thinking about this. You see, why would Hezekiah bring together a collection of the Proverbs of Solomon, most of which are entirely new material, and yet sort of scattered through these chapters is a selection of Proverbs that have already been used, already been found? Why would Hezekiah repeat them again? And you see, I think the answer is crucial to our understanding of the chapters. You see, I believe the reason why he uses them again is because he is now using this proverb in the context of new material. And in the new place that it will find itself, it has a new application. It's the same proverb, but it's given a new meaning by Hezekiah because it's in a different context now. And so that which has already occurred previously, Hezekiah is able to lift it out and to put it into this new collection in a way that the same proverb now gives a different teaching. Not a different principle, but a different teaching, a different application of the principle in a new context. Which all leads to another very interesting conclusion, and that's this. I think you'll probably remember that in our opening remarks on, was it Saturday night, I made this point about this section. I think actually it has application to the book as a whole, but I can certainly speak about this section. You see, I think we've always taken the book of Proverbs to be a sort of a potpourri of ideas, that every chapter is a lovely kaleidoscope of pithy maxims. But beyond that, who knows? And what we're really going to say in the course of studying these chapters is, no, every chapter here, in fact, follows a structure, a sequence of thought. Hezekiah has grouped all of this material quite carefully in order that he might bring forth certain principles. That's why he's borrowed some proverbs from an earlier section and used them again, because they're essential to the context that he's now wanting to talk about. And in fact, these chapters are going to have a very specific structure and theme. And once you find the theme, it's like a key, and it opens the door of that chapter. And all of a sudden, the whole chapter falls into sequence. And what we first thought was a kaleidoscope of pretty colors is actually a much more carefully thought out process of Proverbs that Hezekiah has brought together for a specific purpose. Remember, we said that these are Proverbs of one king, Solomon, copied out by another king, Hezekiah, that we might learn to prepare for kingship. These are the Proverbs as to how a king is to learn to exercise authority by the superior principles of the truth. And I believe that that's, in fact, what these chapters are all about. Now, in your books, you've already got the titles for these sessions. Those titles were not selected without some thought, because what you've actually got in the titles is, I believe, the key to each of these chapters. This is the key idea that unlocks the chapter. So I think that chapter 25 is all about how to handle issues. You see, this is something that kings need to learn. You see, these chapters are all about kings learning to exercise the principles of kingship. And you see, chapter 25, the key idea is how to handle issues. Kings have got to know how to do that. They've got to find the right approach to deal with things. They're problem solvers, are kings. They face many difficulties in exercising authority, and if they don't understand how to handle things, they'll only make them worse. So there are principles of the right approach in the truth that need to be learned by those who would be kings and queens of the age to come. And that's what that chapter is all about. And we, God willing, in our study tomorrow, we'll firstly look at that at a brief breakup of the chapter, and then we're going to have a look at some of the verses. It will, unfortunately, only be some of the verses, because when I did these studies home in my home ecclesia, I did 5 one-hour sessions on each chapter. And I have found it a little difficult to compress 5 hours into 45 minutes. So, in fact, we're going to confess defeat before we begin, and, in fact, take some verses out of each chapter where we can really chew on them properly, but use that as an illustration of the sequence of thought that's found in the chapter as a whole. Well, that's what chapter 25 is all about. Chapter 26 is on how to discern character. That's the key that opens the chapter, how to discern character. You see, a king's got to understand the subjects of his realm. If he doesn't understand, then he will find that he could have troublemakers in the kingdom, problem people, people who will disrupt the stability of his rule. So he's got to learn to discern the characters of others, so that he may best learn how to deal with them for the good of the kingdom as a whole. And in chapter 26, therefore, we're going to find some of the characters that the king must learn to discern so that he can act wisely in the governance of the kingdom. In chapter 27, we're going to find that the key theme of that chapter is how to manage relationships. How to manage relationships. You see, even a king has to have relationships. He has his friends, he has his family, he has his servants. He's got to know how to deal with each of those groups wisely. Kings have got to learn relationship skills. And that chapter is all about that idea. And it covers, as far as I can see, every single relationship that a king is likely to have. He's got to learn them all. He's got to learn all of those things so that he can conduct himself with wisdom. Chapter 28 is all about the principle of how to show integrity. You see, kings are especially subject, aren't they, to an attack on their moral integrity, because they're in a position of power. They have the opportunity to dispense with principles of integrity, should they wish to. It's very hard for a person who has all the power to make whatever decisions they wish to make to hold fast to moral principles that are right and sound. Well, that chapter's all about learning to practice integrity. Kings need to learn that. And there are many circumstances in life when integrity may be tested, where integrity may be called into question. The king's got to therefore learn how he might practice that in every circumstance of life that he might come upon or come across. And then finally in chapter 29, we're going to find that the key idea in chapter 29 is how to govern wisely. A kingdom at the end of the day has to be governed by somebody, but there are principles of wise governance. There's a right way and a wrong way to do things in the administration of the kingdom's affairs. The king has to learn to do all those things. I suppose, you see, I think one of the lessons that comes out of these chapters, therefore, is this. You see, when a king came to the throne, he didn't suddenly arrive at the tender age of whatever it was and say, well, here we are, I'm the king now. Now, I wonder what we have to do to be a king. No, he already knew, didn't he? From the moment that he was a tiny tot, he'd been groomed to be a king. He'd been instructed in the principles of kingship from an early age so that as a child he might grow up to understand the role he would play and the things he would need to learn. So that by the time he assumes the throne, he already knows those principles. The kings, the wise kings, particularly of Judah, didn't arrive at kingship without careful and thorough preparation in those divine principles that they needed to know. And of course, here's the lesson. Well, do we wish to be kings and priests of the age to come? Then we ought to learn the principles of kingship now, surely. Isn't this the time for the preparation of those who desire to exercise rulership and authority in the age to come? So therefore today is the time of preparation that we might learn the principles of kingship, and that's what these chapters are all about. They're going to help prepare us for rulership in the age to come. You know, there's a strange chemistry, by the way, between these two people in the narrative, Solomon and Hezekiah. I think they were bound together. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that I believe that Hezekiah modeled himself on Solomon. You know, people need a mentor, a role model to look up to. And I think that, you see, Hezekiah's own father was a wicked man. So he couldn't look to his father as an example. So he went back to the past. And he went back to what he thought was the golden age of Israel's history. And he modeled himself on Solomon. And if you come to the life of Hezekiah, you'll find there are many touches in the narrative of his life that show that he looked up to Solomon as his role model. And it's Hezekiah, you see, that copies out these proverbs, the proverbs of Solomon, as his own private collection. Hezekiah also ordered the book of Psalms. Did Solomon write any Psalms? Did Solomon write any Psalms? Anybody know? Yes or no? We have a nod. An affirmative nod. One presumes an affirmative nod. Well, yes, he did. He wrote one psalm. Does anyone know what psalm Solomon wrote? He wrote Psalm 127. Just come and have a look at that for a moment. This is a digression, and really, in these limited moments of 45 minutes, one should not really have digressions. But for just one short moment, Psalm 127. Now, Psalm 127, by the way, is part of the... Simon knows about the Songs of Degrees. Who brought together the Songs of Degrees? Why? Good King Hezekiah of Judah. It was Hezekiah that specially organized the Songs of Degrees. And in the middle of the Songs of Degrees, he found one psalm that was written by Solomon. You see, Psalm 127, a Song of Degrees. It says here, for Solomon, but you'll see the margin, it says of Solomon. I believe this psalm was written by Solomon, but Hezekiah plucked it out of the records of Israel and inserted it into his Songs of Degrees. And you know what this psalm celebrates? This psalm celebrates the joy of children that are heading towards the kingdom. Verse 3, lo, children are an heritage of Yahweh, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. And the psalmist sees the idea of a man who draws back the arrow and the bow, and the arrow is straight, and the arrow is his son, and he shoots it off to Zion. And it pictures the idea of a man who has a quiver full of straight arrows heading towards the kingdom. How happy that man is. You know what's really interesting about all that, brothers and sisters? You see, this psalm was written by Solomon. You know what the divine record tells us about Solomon's family? He only had one son. And he wasn't straight. His name was Rehoboam. and he undid all the good that his father stood for. And Solomon, although he wrote a psalm about the happiness of children that grow up straight and true, never ever really experienced that in his own life, because his own son was a fool. And you know what the record says about Hezekiah? The record says he only ever had one son. And his son undid all that his father stood for. His name was Manasseh. And his son was a fool. And he wasn't straight. And I think you see that when Hezekiah found that psalm written by Solomon, he felt a strange connection of thought with Solomon, because they'd both experienced the tragedy of a son who went astray. Yes, you find there's a strange chemistry in the record between Hezekiah and Solomon. It touches upon us in several different places in the narrative. Now, when we come back to these chapters, I believe that a very fruitful source of study in 25 to 29 of Proverbs is to realize that these were Proverbs written by Solomon, and therefore they have application in his life, but they were copied out by Hezekiah, and therefore they have application in Hezekiah's life. And a wonderful study is to do just that, is to try and trace the thought of these Proverbs back into the life of Solomon, and also out into the life of Hezekiah, to see the actual application of them in the lives of those kings themselves. Shall we take, well, just two examples from each? There's actually many that we could do, but let's take two from each. Now, in chapter 25, by way of example, we're told in Proverbs 25 and verse, let's have a look here. Proverbs 25, verse 5. Says there, take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. So here's a principle, you see. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. Do you know that, you see, that actually happened in Solomon's life. You see, Solomon understood that principle. If you come back to the first of Kings chapter 2, that is in fact precisely what happened at the time of the establishment of his reign. In the first of Kings chapter 2, we read these words, you see, starting at verse 23, 1 Kings 2, verse... It says there, then King Solomon swear by Yahweh, saying, God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah have not spoken this word against his own life. Now therefore, as Yahweh liveth, which hath established me and set me on the throne of David my father, and who hath made me an house as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death this day. You see, Adonijah was a wicked man, wasn't he? He sought for the kingship. He sought to usurp the authority of Solomon. And Solomon, in fact, has this wicked man taken away from before him. And not just he. But in verse 26 we're told, and unto Abiathar the priest said the king, get thee to Anathoth, unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. But I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord God before David, my father. So Solomon, verse 27, thrusts out Abiathar from being priest, that he might fulfill the word of God. Abiathar was removed from before him. Verse 33, their blood shall be upon the head of Joab, but upon David and upon his seed and upon his house and upon his throne there shall be peace. So Benaiah, verse 34, the son of Jehoiada went up and fell upon him and slew him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. So Joab was removed. So firstly the priest, and then the military. And then in verse 44, remember this man, the king said moreover to Shimei. Now Shimei, of course, belonged to the royal house of Saul. The previous house, the previous royal house, remember. And he says to him in verse 44, thou knowest all the wickedness which thine heart is privy to, that thou didst to David my father. Therefore, Yahweh shall return thy wickedness upon thy head. So the king, verse 46, commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, which went out and fell upon him, that he died. So you see, the wicked were taken away from before the king, weren't they? Abiathar, Adonijah, Joab, Shimei, all these wicked ones, these wicked persons, were removed from before the king, King Solomon. And as a result of that, verse 45 of this chapter says, and the throne of David shall be established before Yahweh forever. And the end of verse 46 says, and the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. And Proverbs 25 and verse 5 had said, take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. Oh, yes, Solomon knew all about that principle, didn't he? You see, the Proverbs are found outworked in the lives of these kings. And out of that, of course, we're going to draw a principle that, God willing, we'll come to tomorrow. What about chapter 27, verse 10? In chapter 27 of Proverbs, and verse 10, it says this. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Thine own friend and thy father's friend, says the record. Now, if you come to the first of Kings chapter 5, you'll find an illustration of that principle in the life of Solomon. Solomon knew all about this. The first of Kings chapter 5, and reading firstly from verses 1 and 2. And there it says, and Hiram king of Tyre sent his servants unto Solomon, for they had heard that he had anointed him king in the room of his father, for Hiram was ever a lover of David. Now the word lover here is the word Ahab in the Hebrew, which simply is one of the Hebrew words for friend. Hiram was ever a friend of David. So he was David's friend, says the record. But in verse 2 we're told, and Solomon sent to Hiram. And in verse 7 we have the response of Hiram. It says, it came to pass when Hiram heard the words of Solomon that he rejoiced greatly. And he said, blessed be Yahweh this day which hath given unto David a wise son over this great people. And verse 12 says, and Yahweh gave Solomon wisdom as he promised him. And there was peace between Hiram and Solomon. And they too made a league together. But you see, this was his father's friend, wasn't it? And Solomon forsook not his father's friend, but made him his own friend. And he also entered into league with Hiram, as had his father David. Oh yes, Solomon understood these principles in the Proverbs he wrote. And a very fruitful line of study is to trace the thoughts of those Proverbs back into the life of the king. And just as they applied to Solomon, well, so they applied to Hezekiah. Why do you think Hezekiah had written these down? Because, you see, these were Proverbs that he was particularly interested in. He saw them as relevant and seemly in terms of his own kingship in the land. So a couple of illustrations then from the life of Hezekiah. Well, I think one rather nice one is chapter 25 and verse 13. As the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. So we have the idea of a messenger going forth with a message who presumably comes back with an answer that, because it's been faithfully delivered, refreshes the soul of he that sent the messenger. Now come and have a look at the second of Chronicles, chapter 30. The second of Chronicles, chapter 30. As the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. You know that in the second of Chronicles and chapter 30, Hezekiah decided that he would keep a special Passover feast. You'll remember this. And he decided that he would invite all to come from all parts of both Judah and Israel. And so we're told in verse 5, so they established a decree to make proclamation throughout all Israel. That's important there, from Beersheba even to Dan, that they should come to keep the Passover unto Yahweh Elohim of Israel at Jerusalem. for they had not done it of a long time and such sort as it was written. So the posts went with the letters. Ah, here we are. You see, here's the faithful messengers that have now been sent forth by the king. The posts, the postmen. They were the runners, as the Hebrew word means, and they ran out with the message of the king to invite all and sundry. Verse 6 says, they went with the letters from the king and his princes throughout all Israel and Judah according to the commandment of the king. Verse 10 says, so the posts passed from city to city through the country of Ephraim and Manasseh, even unto Zebulun. But they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. Nevertheless, verse 11, divers of Asher and Manasseh and of Zebulun humbled themselves and came to Jerusalem. And also in Judah, the hand of God was to give them one heart to do the commandment of the king and the princes by the word of Yahweh. And the messengers came back, you see, and they said to Hezekiah, we have taken the message, and some are coming. Some of Zebulun, some of Asher, some of Manasseh, they have humbled themselves. They're on the way. They're coming to keep the Passover. And the heart of the king was glad, and his soul was refreshed, because the faithful messengers had returned with a cheering message of hope concerning those who would come to keep the Passover. Oh yes, I think Hezekiah knew all about the cheering effect, the refreshing effect of faithful messengers. What about this one here? Proverbs chapter... Well, let's take Proverbs 27, verse 1. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Now, I'd like you to come to the prophecy of Isaiah and to the 38th chapter. Now, in Isaiah 38 and verse 1, we read these words. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, came unto him and said unto him, thus saith Yahweh, set thine house in order, or thou shalt die and not live. And if ever there was a man who understood the meaning of the proverb, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth, it was this man, wasn't it? Who found that on one particular day in his life, the prophet Isaiah walked in and said, you're going to die, set your house in order. And the man may not boast of tomorrow as if it belongs to him, because it does not. You know the tragedy, by the way, of Isaiah 38. The tragedy, of course, was that when Isaiah had said, you see in verse 1, set thine house in order, Hezekiah knew full well that he couldn't do that. Because, you see, he didn't have a house. Because, you see, he hadn't yet married. He hadn't raised up a seed to the line of David. In fact, because of his endeavors in the nation, good though they may have been, he had neglected to raise up a child so that the very line of Messiah may be preserved. He had jeopardized the line of Messiah through lack of marriage and lack of family. And when the prophet said to him, set thine house in order, it suddenly must have hit Hezekiah with the realization of what he had not attended to in his responsibilities as king. Boast not of tomorrow. Oh yes, Hezekiah knew all about that. And verse 2 says, Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed unto Yahweh and said, remember now, O Yahweh, I beseech thee, how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore, and God hearkened to the cries of his servant. And you read these words in verse 5. This is good Bible study, by the way, which is good Bible reading, isn't it? You see, the two things are synonymous. Good Bible study is all really about good Bible reading. Now, you see verse 5. Just look at this. Go and say to Hezekiah, came the message. Thus saith the Lord, the God of David, thy father. Now, why do you think that the record specifically makes mention of David there? Isn't it because that's what Hezekiah had done, that he had jeopardized the house of David, that he had jeopardized the line of David, that he had not produced a godly seed, the seed from which Messiah would spring? Thus says the God of David, thy father, I have heard thy prayer, and I will add unto thy days 15 years. And in those 15 years, you know the first thing he did? He got married. And he had a son. And his wife's name, of course, was, anybody know? Anyone know Hezekiah's wife's name? Her name was Hephzibah. And it's believed that she was the daughter of Isaiah the prophet. We can't tell for sure, but it's a nice thought. Now, brothers and sisters, we're not kings yet, but we ought to be preparing. And the thing is that although the principle of rulership is not exercised by us in the fullest sense yet, we can prepare even today, because we're rulers in the making. And there are principles of rulership in life today which ought to be practiced. In our marriages, in our families. In marriage, it says in Genesis, thy desire shall be subject to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee, says Genesis 3, verse 16. In families, it says in the 1st of Timothy 3, verse 4, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. In the law of Moses, honour thy father and mother, so that a mother was to become the undisputed queen of her household and worthy of respect. In the ecclesia, in the 1st of Timothy 5, verse 17, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honour. And finally, in our own lives, Proverbs 16 and verse 32 says, he that ruleth his own spirit is better than he that taketh a city. So the principles of rulership ought to be exercised in our lives even now. And from these chapters, therefore, we can learn wonderful and great guidance so that we today may prepare for that kingship of tomorrow.